නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear Dhamma friends, since we have completed last time on the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, I thought of taking another sutta which is quite interesting and quite deep. And Buddha talks on various deep aspects of the Dhamma. And this is available in Digha Nikaya and it is called Pottapada Sutta. Actually, the sutta deals with several subjects. Some interesting subjects and again certain aspects of the contemporary society was also represented in this sutta, and therefore and on the other hand, this sutta is a long sutta, and again it consists of a lot of aspects related to the morality in its first section, and then some aspects of the concentration, the samadhi part. And again, very interesting explanations are there on the wisdom side as well. Now, if we consider the sutta, if we go from the beginning. So, in one occasion, Buddha was living in the Savatthi, in Anathapindika's Jetavanarama monastery. At that time, there is one wanderer called Pottapada. So, he is staying at the debating hall. Now, this debating hall is actually stated in the park of Queen Mallika, and this person is now actually with 300 wanderers. Now, you can see the king, Kosala, has actually somewhat sponsored or helped other ascetics as well, other religious groups as well, and he is of course a very good a helper, a devotee of the Buddha. And Queen Mallika is also a very devoted woman, a queen of the Buddha. But anyway, she actually has helped other ascetics as well. Now, she has prepared this hall in her park, Queen Mallika's park. And so different ascetic groups come there and they show they explain their belief. So it seems like during that day when the Buddha was arisen, so there is a huge demand or huge interest on various religious aspects. So therefore different groups actually have believed different things, and they want to explain their belief, they want to explain their doctrine. So in order to do that, there are this kind of places prepared, and sometimes different groups come and even debate among themselves. So that was also available, and kind of a spiritual interest was there during that time, and there may be such interest growing in the world time to time. And sometimes people are going after more into the materialistic aspects, forgetting about the spiritual aspects. But on the other hand, sometimes people are fairly concerned about the spiritual side, and therefore such facilities are also available. Now here the incident is Buddha actually going on for village Pindapatha in the early morning, and then he found it is too early to go to Pindapatha. He has enough time to go to Pindapatha. So he thought of visiting Pottapada. Now Pottapada and his 300 wanderers are sort of talking at this particular place, and they are actually talking completely irrelevant things or unsuitable things. Probably you can remember we discussed in the Mahasunyata Sutta that Buddha explained 32 types of wrong talks or wrong conversations. So those wrong conversations are detrimental to one's practice and actually promotes speculations, doubts, perplexities and again mental proliferation. But anyway, these are the subjects that people like to discuss. So similarly here also, they were discussing not something suitable, not something beneficial, but something not beneficial. Now, while this was there, then Buddha thought to visit them, and while he approaches there, and then Pottapada has seen that Buddha approaching them. Now, Pottapada, even though he is a person who is believing some other doctrine, and he is wandering and searching for sort of truth, he has a really good respect towards a Buddha. So this is interesting. So you can understand in a way, Buddha has maintained a very cordial relationship with the others, not only with monks and his lay devotees, rather even with other ascetic groups, other contemplatives, other different religious groups. Buddha was able to maintain a very cordial relationship. So this is one occasion representing that. So Buddha himself visiting them, and they are welcoming him. And the Pottapada actually has good faith with the Buddha, and therefore he asks the other fellow people to be quiet. So he is mentioning, gentlemen, be quiet, don't make a noise, because the Buddha is a person who really appreciates the quietude, who really appreciates the silence. It is not only the outer silence, but even Buddha's teaching takes us to the inner silence. So therefore, Pottapada somehow recognized Buddha's these qualities, and therefore he invites, he instructs his fellows, other colleagues, to be quiet. So therefore, they all become quiet, and then Buddha approached them. And as he approached them, and they have prepared a seat, and asked him to invite him to sit, and Pottapada also take a lower seat. Now you can see they have a very good faith, kind of a trust, respect towards the Buddha, and he has given a better, I mean, a higher seat as well. And once he arrived, then Buddha actually asked, "What did I disturb? I mean, while I was approaching you, what is the talk that you were continuing? And because of my arrival, where did you stop?" So likewise, kind of a very cordial, very friendly kind of a start, beginning Buddha takes. And then actually Pottapada mentioned that our discussion was not that much of beneficial. So you can actually know what we discussed, the subjects that we discuss even later, that has no much value. So anyway, Bhante, it's a really welcome, it's really appreciated that you visit. And actually I had some questions to ask you. So he is mentioning something happened a few days ago, and there was a debate kind of with different groups, Brahmins of various schools. There was a debate and the debating hall regarding the eradication of consciousness, so eradication of perception, so sanya nirodha. Actually, sanya nirodha, even in this translation of Digha Nikaya, it is represented as extinction of consciousness. But in the Pali term, it is abhisanya nirodha. So that is very much like the removal of various perceptions. Even though the translator has translated it as extinction of consciousness, the Pali term is very much like sanya nirodha, that is the extinction of perception. On the other hand, when one is doing extinction of perception, actually gradually and parallelly converts the consciousness from conditioned consciousness to unmanifested consciousness. We can later discuss these matters, some highly advanced topics. Anyway, the translator of this Digha Nikaya translated it as extinction of consciousness. So there was a debate about that. Different religious groups, Brahmin groups, schools, they have come together and they were discussing these subjects, how one may do that. And then different views has arisen, and one was telling that perceptions arise and cease without cause or condition. So he is talking something entirely a different way. So one argument is, one was telling that the perceptions arise due to no reason, and therefore they also cease for no reason, and they are completely out of cause or condition. So this is one belief, one argument that a certain group has put forward. So when they arise, when one is conscious, and when it ceases, one is not conscious, and it comes without any cause and condition. So this is something, one belief they were given. And then another person was telling that it is not so. Perception is the self. Perception is the self, and it comes and goes. When it comes, one is conscious, and when it goes, one is not conscious. Once it has gone, one is unconscious in a way. So basically, this is another belief they were discussing. This is the second one, we can see. Then the third one, one is mentioned that there are Brahmins of great powers, and they are actually of great influence. So they are the ones inserting or drawing down consciousness into a man. And then that mighty power person withdraws that consciousness, perception, and that is on his command. So when he insert, when he influence that consciousness or perception, then one is conscious. And when one has withdrawn that, then he is not conscious, he is unconscious. So this is the third belief. This particular person, this another group of Brahmins were telling. And then another group was telling it is a mighty kind of deities are there with great powers. Not a Brahmin, but various deities are there. Maybe celestial beings are there who are more powerful, and they are the ones influencing onto consciousness. So they are putting the consciousness into one's mind. And they are the ones withdrawing that consciousness from one's mind. When they have put it, they are conscious. When they have withdrawn it, they are unconscious. They are unconscious. So these kinds of four views they have put. So now at that audience, there was this Pottapada, and he was actually thinking of the Buddha. So now the debate is going on. Different people have different views, and none of them agree with the other. So they are arguing each other, debating. But at that time, this Pottapada was thinking about the Buddha. And he is mentioning, I was quite sort of thinking about you, Venerable Sir, because you are the person who can really explain this. You are the one who has deep understanding about these matters. So I was thinking about you. If you were here, you may have given a better solution, better idea, or you have explained the proper situation. And that was the thought I had. And then now, after recalling that incident, Pottapada now put in the question to the Buddha. Now, what is the real way of extinction of this perception? How one may have to do it? So, actually, we can interpret it differently also. You know, this Buddha has mentioned, Sanya Nidanahi Papancha Sankha. This mental proliferation is actually rooted in Sanya, rooted in various perceptions, rooted in various signs. Now, if one is able to gradually overcome this perception, gradually fade away all these sanya signs, then on the other hand, we can say one is giving a solution for mental proliferation. In other terms, if one is slowly calming down or eradicating systematically, removing unnecessary perceptions, then one can say one is calming down oneself, removing all the mental proliferations, removing unnecessary thinking or overthinking, obsessive thinking, and one become completely silent. So inner silence could be achieved. So therefore we can approach the question of when this Pottapada differently, that he is asking another method how one may be able to overcome all these mental proliferations. But that is not the question actually he asked. He asked the way it was termed there, Abhisanya Nirodha, how one may overcome the perceptions. But when one is overcoming perceptions, ultimately they overcome proliferation as well. Anyway, now he is asking what is the way, or is it what, how one can achieve it. Now at that time Buddha immediately mentioned the person who has mentioned that the eradication of consciousness or eradication of perception happens without a cause, without a condition. So that is first of all wrong. It's a wrong view. It's a michaditti. So Buddha mentioned one's perceptions arise and cease owing to a cause and condition, owing to causes and conditions. So here you can understand Buddha's teaching very well established on this Paticchasamuppada, Idappacceta, the principle of cause and effect. And here also Buddha highlights that, mentioning that if someone is mentioning that arising and ceasing of perceptions happen due to no reason, then that's wrong view. Basically, this arising and ceasing of consciousness, arising and ceasing of perceptions happen due to reasons, due to causes, due to conditions. So that is first of all Buddha clear. And then Buddha starts to explain his teaching. Now he starts to preach his teaching, his understanding about this problem, about this question. Now he is getting to telling this perceptions arise through training, and some perceptions pass away due to training. Now training is mentioned here, sikha. Sikha is the term used in Pali. So there is a beneficial training. When one follows such beneficial training, one is able to overcome unnecessary or harmful perceptions. On the other hand, when one is following a beneficial training, one is able to develop maybe some beneficial kind of perceptions. Now this is something Buddha mentioned. So on the other hand, we can say one is developing some refined type of perceptions so that one can eliminate the gross kinds of perceptions. Actually, differently also we can say, probably you can remember in Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha highlights some close technique, what we call as idang nissaya idam pajahata. Using this, abandon that. By means of this, abandon that. So this is a very interesting principle where Buddha uses, say if you want to remove some unwholesome behavior, you may be undertaking some wholesome behavior. Using wholesome behavior, you are trying to abandon unwholesome behavior. Suppose your mind has some angry thoughts, so you can abandon them by means of loving kindness. So likewise, certain techniques are there using which you can abandon what is unnecessary, and these things actually are quite helpful. And in the previous sutta, Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, Buddha explained to abandon household type of pleasures with the pleasures of renunciative life, or with the pleasures or happiness of the meditative life. So likewise, this thing, this principle is again and again used, quite helpful. And here also it is highlighted. Now, using one kind of training, one can abandon certain unnecessary, unbeneficial, harmful kinds of perceptions. And using another kinds of training, one can develop what is beneficial.
And here, now, without immediately giving a very cognitive type of answer, Buddha approaches the problem from a little bit of a broader perspective. Now, the question asked is, even though it is very short, it has a broader meaning. Because one has to eliminate all the unnecessary harmful type of perceptions, and again one has to develop what is beneficial, useful type of perceptions. Now this is the argument, this is the question. Now Buddha doesn't give a kind of a philosophical answer here, rather he goes a very practical kind of an answer. Philosophy is also there, but anyway, he is taking a broader perspective when he is explaining his answer. We can say he has taken a kind of behavioral aspect, and again he has taken a kind of a mental development side, and again he has taken a cognitive transformation. Now these three categories are well known in today's what you call this modern psychology, and the Buddha's answer is very much telling with that also. In other terms, Buddha has given the answer based on Sila Samadhi Panya. He first explain the benefit of the sila, the morality, and then he explain how one may develop mentality or the concentration, and using which then Buddha mentioned how to abandon wrong perceptions and to develop necessary or good perceptions, and even one can overcome subtle or gross perceptions using subtle perceptions. So likewise, kind of a gradual approach is mentioned, and therefore this sutta spent fair amount of pages explaining the morality first. Later it explains the concentration, and then the real deep aspects of the sutta is available. Now, without jumping directly to those deep aspects, I thought of discussing morality part as well, because we haven't touched that for a long time. So the morality part is available in the other suttas also. Now, Digha Nikaya has many suttas, and you know the first 13 suttas are based on morality, in the sense that they explain morality in detail. And they are the ones highlighted in the first part of the Digha Nikaya. So therefore, the morality part explained in all these suttas are very much similar, and therefore the translator has omitted that part, telling that you have to refer the previous sutta. Now I am going to a previous sutta to explain you that morality part. So now here actually the morality. Now it is starting with the very basic five precepts, and enhancing that it is taken to the eight precepts, and here is more oriented towards the ascetics, monks. So therefore, when you all are listening to this as lay people, I mean, you don't need to confuse about these monks' precepts, because the sutta is going on to a kind of an ascetic group and explaining to the Pottapada, and they are the wanderer, 300 wanderers are there, they already renunciated the lay life. So therefore Buddha explained it to the ascetics. Buddha explained this to some spiritual group who have completely left their house, and now they are wanderers seeking the truth. Therefore no problem in with the Buddha here explaining completely on the monk's sila, or the what you call the Patimokkha Sangvara sila, rather than just explaining the five precepts. Even though they are not Buddha's followers, they are another ascetic group, and therefore Buddha explained the morality part in full detail, not just the five precepts, but he enhanced it to the full-fledged Patimokkha Sangvara sila, what is followed by a bhikkhu, a higher ordained monk. Now here also it is divided into three levels: the short section of morality, is what the Chula Sila is what mentioned at its earliest stage. So here actually some parts are known to all of us, starting with the Panatipata Veeramani. Now Buddha mentioned abandoning the taking of life, that whoever follows him and him he himself dwells refraining from taking life. Now Panatipata Veeramani, Panatipataya Pativirato Samanna. This Buddha explained that one is abandoning taking life, and again he doesn't use any stick or sword or any kind of other weapons, because he is more compassionate. And he is actually thinking about the welfare of all living beings. And therefore he is living a very compassionate life. Lajji dayapanno. He is ashamed of killing others, harming others. And on the other hand, he is considering the welfare of everyone, trying to protect their lives rather than harming their lives. Now this is even though they are very basic, now you can even understand today how important this kind of a precept, because people are not much caring about others' lives, and they sometimes kill others and kill animals. So they actually have not very much neglected these kind of very basic principles. And Buddha starts with that, mentioning that abandoning the taking of life. So we don't have any kind of a right to kill another person, right to kill an animal, and they of course have the right to live. So if we are taking someone else's life, so that is where we are doing a transgression. Now here therefore Buddha mentioned that the follower of the Buddha is abandoning taking of life. And then further, the second one, dwells refraining from taking what is not given. That is the stealing. So basically the follower does not steal. Buddha's disciples does not steal. So they are living a very pure life, accepting only what is given. And on the other hand, so they actually help to protect someone else's even whatever their belongings. Suppose your friend is going somewhere and you have to look after their belongings. You are helping to look after their belongings. Or sometimes you are helping another person to look after their belongings. And you are not cheating. You are not stealing. Even though the opportunity is available for you to cheat or steal, as you are following Buddha's teaching, as much as possible, you are not cheating. You are not stealing. It is not that always that we are being looked after or we being observed by others. Rather, we ourselves become more truthful and true to type, and therefore one is living a very pure life, not stealing. And then here the third one is completely about the celibacy. So here, as I mentioned, it is oriented towards a ascetic group who have already renunciated. So therefore Buddha directly mentioned abandoning chastity. This his followers and himself lives a celibate life, overcoming the sexual intercourse. And then going to the fourth one, Buddha mentioned abandoning the false speech. One uses only the truthful speech. He's a truth speaker, and he's trustworthy, therefore he's dependable, and people start to understand that when one is truthful and he abandoned all the false speech, then slowly people understand this person's character. Then he become well appreciated, and he become kind of a dependable person, a trustworthy person. Actually, sometimes we don't understand the benefits of these precepts, but here, time to time, it is possible to understand the benefits. Because, say for example, when one becomes truthful, immediately we can't understand the benefit. But as you are continuing your that nature, even when you can lie, you are not lying. Even when there's an opportunity to cheat, you are not doing it. So likewise, when you are living that kind of a life, then you become trustworthy. This trustworthiness that we have to, in a way, win. You can't force others to trust you. Rather, you are living an exemplary life. So then others slowly start to trust you. It is something you are slowly developing. You are slowly cultivating. And when you become trustworthy, so you have earned something. It is not material, but it is something really beneficial. And again, it has other benefits as well. When you become trustworthy, so they may give you some even more kind of tasks, in the sense which are more serious, because you are dependable, you are trustworthy. They may even reveal their secrets. So likewise, a trustworthy person is a blessing to a group, to a society. And without cheating others, without lying to others, so he maintained this trustworthiness. And then Buddha mentioned abandoning malicious speech. And he doesn't encourage, this particular person doesn't encourage any kind of division among the group, among the society, or among the friends. So if there is two friends who are now have somewhat separated, who bearing some grudges, so this person may go and try to reconcile it. And therefore he encourage the peace, and he delights in it. And he speaks for peace, to have a accord. And therefore, he never go into any kind of malicious speech to divide two people or two groups or two countries or whatever it is. Rather, he always try to reconcile and to develop the peace. And abandoning harsh speech, he refrains from harsh speech. And he's only using what is blameless and pleasing to hear, and again what is agreeable, and it is again, I mean, the words are used which are more sort of cordial, more closer to the heart, reaching the heart, and pleasing and attractive words are used. Now you can see how Buddha has explained a very pleasant way of life. How one can deal with others, because using words, we are communicating with others. And actually using words, we are harming ourselves and the others as well. So, how if we are using proper words, if we are using soft words, depending on the situation, then actually we can maintain a good relationship. And on the other hand, abandoning idle chatter. Buddha mentioned here that one speaks only what is necessary, to the point. And he may discuss about the discipline, the Dhamma, and probably you can remember the 10 subjects that Buddha recommend to discuss. Appijata, Santuttita, like that. So there were 10 subjects Buddha explained, 10 topics Buddha explained to discuss. So likewise, one's discussion or one's talk is fairly useful. He has abandoned idle chattering. And whatever he is mentioning, whatever his talk is very much like a treasure, quite useful. There is nothing to abandon, nothing to give up. Rather, everything what he has mentioned is really true, really useful, really beneficial, maybe either in the mundane life or in the super mundane life. Now, these are the points first highlighted by the Buddha, and this actually we can say very much like the bodily and verbal conduct, proper conduct. And then Buddha mentioned about the other side, which are more relevant to the ascetics. Now he mentioned his followers, monks, have abandoned damaging seeds and crops. Probably you can remember how Buddha established the Vassa season or rainy season. Vassana. Now, during that time, monks used to wander every day, but the other ascetics basically stopped wandering during the rainy season. So other people start to complain why this recluse Gautama and his followers are wandering even during the rainy season, our crops being harmed. So the Buddha then put the, what you call this, Katina Sikkhapada, where during the rainy season one has to stay in a monastery without wandering, without traveling. Now that is how the 3 months of the rainy season, where the monks have to observe certain rules and to stay in a particular monastery without wandering. So that is being practiced even today. So monks have to select a particular monastery and they as much as possible adhere to that monastery. And then Buddha mentioned he avoids watching dancing, singing, music and shows, and all these things are very much into the entertainment. So he avoids that kind of entertainment. So people are used to and they're fond of entertaining themselves, going to dancing, singing, music and that kind of thing. But the Buddha's followers, monks, nuns, so when they are in their higher training, so they are avoiding all this. And again, all these costumes, perfumes, cosmetics, so that is also abandoned. And again, he does not accept any gold or silver. So any kind of raw flesh. And then he doesn't accept any servants, like servant girls or that type of thing. And slaves doesn't accept. And sheep and goats and that kind of, say, animals he doesn't accept. And doesn't involve in the buying and selling, not doing any kind of business. And doesn't use any cheating equipment, this kind of weights or measures. And doesn't involve with any kind of such activities. Actually, very much like the other part is very much explained. So basically, these are very refined level of precepts. And Buddha mentioned that his follower and himself is very much like adhere to these precepts. And then he get on to the middle kind of morality, middle section. There are, he mentioned that certain ascetics, certain Brahmins, even though they are fed by the faithful, or they are being given all the alms, after eating that, so they are addicted to some destructive things. So they are actually being fed by generous devotees. After eating their whatever food, so these people are not really properly behaving. So Buddha highlights here again this point. So here Buddha mentioned, his followers after having alms is not involved with any kind of a destructive activity, and here starting with the agricultural points, his followers are not destroying the roots, seeds, etc., because that is harming the plant life. So probably you can connect here with the certain practice that the monastics are undertaking, that when seeds are given to eat, say for example you are offering some seeds which has the potential to plant, to germinate. Now if such seeds are available, then monk has to ask for their to make it allowable, what you call the kapyam. So then monks is asking to make it allowable. So then the layperson has to make it allowable by saying that this is allowable, this is allowable, this is allowable 3 times. So it's a kind of a practice followed by monastics. So when there are seeds, available which has the potential to germinate, then that has to be made allowable. Kapyam karohi. Probably you have heard about this. And then and another point highlighted here, higher ordained monks are not allowed to store food. And that is highlighted here. So he is not storing stuff. He is simply living a very simple life, frugal life. Doesn't storing anything. And maybe food, drinks, clothes, beds, perfumes, meat, and these kinds of things he is not interested, or he is not allowed to store. So that's why monks have to go on Pindapatha daily. He can't simply gather or accumulate dry rations and cook by himself, or ask someone else to cook for him. But sometimes these things have somewhat diluted today, and due to certain reasons, sometimes monks themselves are cooking, and sometimes he is keeping another layperson to do those things on behalf of him, or sometimes they are using a refrigerator to store food. So you can see, I mean, things have somewhat diluted, and these Vinaya rules are somewhat changed nowadays. And then similarly, Buddha mentioned that certain ascetics, after eating what is given by the generous devotees, they sometimes involved in dancing, singing, music, and using various musical instruments, and sometimes using various animals for different plays, and looking at such that kind of playful activities. So sometimes looking at various fighting, different wars, and sometimes army parades. So all these things Buddha mentioned are not done by his followers, by his ascetics. Now these things are some subtle aspects which is coming to the Patimokkha Sangvara Sila, where Buddha explained altogether 227 rules for the higher ordained monks. So they are at different places, these points are highlighted. Here actually the given kind of a summary of those rules, those precepts, and going to look at wars, going to look at armies, their parades, their training, and all those things Buddha didn't recommend. But on the other hand, nowadays we have, even though monks doesn't have to physically go there, they can either switch on a TV, they can either switch on to internet, and they can see them even live. And they don't need to visit a musical show, but while at his hut, at his temple, they can simply switch on the TV. Various entertainment channels are available, they can look at them. But this is where the monks have to be, in a way, quite careful. Now the facilities are available, even without moving, even without going physically there, one can enjoy all these things. So that is why this, even this monk society has somewhat become fairly deteriorated, because the technology has advanced so that all this entertainment is available, accessible very easily. Simply one needs to switch on a TV, simply one needs to switch on a computer, everything is available. And even nowadays, things are available in the smartphone. Everybody has a smartphone and everything is available. So therefore, maintaining restraintment is quite challenging, and again, they are becoming very much of the norm of the society. So a monk who wish to higher training, who wants to maintain higher training, actually has a challenging task. And then and further Buddha highlights different kinds of games like chess games. So there also you can see maybe 8 rows, 10 rows, likewise everything is explained in this sutta. So sometimes monks, if they have enough time, probably they can spend time in doing this kind of gaming. So Buddha mentioned, so that is completely abandoned. So his followers are not doing that kind of activities. So that is coming under the training. So without going further and further, let me stop here. So very much like these subtle aspects of the high ordination is explained in this sutta. Actually, we have to slowly go through them a little bit, not everything in detail, but I'm very much like summarizing the thing. I felt it is interesting to know that how Buddha has restrained the monks, how he is explaining that these things are, if they are following the precepts, how they are helping to overcome defilements, overcome mental proliferation, and even to overcome different perceptions. Now, this is the training. So, using the training, you are refining your way of life. Using the training, the moral training, you are refining your behavior. So, if one is engaged with so much of these things, so that actually promote thinking. Now, say for example, if one is looking a war, nowadays there are a few wars going on in the world. Now, if one is always look at the television or look at the, say, internet, always going through various news, switching on the YouTube and looking at various recorded events, so that promotes thinking, that promotes some sort of confusion, and things what you see is quite depressive, alarming, so that promotes more and more thinking, and it is harmful to ourselves. And whatever promotes thinking, whatever promotes that kind of harmful thinking, obsessive type of thinking, here everything Buddha has abandoned. You can see, even though today's facilities were not there, Buddha was quite thoughtful in that sense. He has far-sighted, and all these unnecessary and triggering factors he has eliminated. So basically he has instructed, don't go to those places, abandon this kind of enjoyment, indulgence, and to live a kind of a frugal, restrained life. So that makes the mind somewhat simplified. Without having all these complexities, now one's mind is fairly simplified. One's life is quite easy, and others can feed that particular person easily. He is not a burden to the society, but he is maintaining a very frugal, simple life. So his way of life has less opportunities to mental proliferation. He's not involved with too much of perceptions. Now, when someone is in a really city environment, so many things are there. There may be movies, there may be musical shows, there may be other auctions. So, you don't need to go out. Now, everything is available at your house. You can switch on the TV and hundreds of channels are available. And you can switch on to the internet, everything is available. So information has completely, in a way, overwhelmed the mind. So people are more fond of going through all these things, and they are completely spending time with all these things, and they are ultimately end up with kind of mental issues, various kinds of disorders. Mental disorders ultimately they get on to, because we don't know the limit. We are not restraining ourselves. So here Buddha highlights that all these behavioral aspects are quite useful for the training, so that one can eliminate all unnecessary perceptions, so that one's mind can be kept simple as well as fairly pure. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching sessions. We'll continue from that point on next week. And I like to open the session for questions.